Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
29 there, everything was IPs because that's where cars, they had cars stored there. Turns out Alabama Gulf Rail controls the majority of the yard that's there just west of 29. And what had been happening regularly, which is hopefully happening less now, is you had them using that area for storage. They were just storing cars there. And it's like any type of capacity thing. If you have, if you have half of the bathtub filled up with sand, it can only hold half of the water, and it's going to overflow quickly.
Technically water can fill in the cracks in the sand, but okay, fine, sure, I get the metaphor that if you've got a certain amount of storage area off the rail line and then you're putting more trains into the total vicinity, then that storage area off the rail line by IP, this is on, the west side of US 29, south of Muskogee Road, by the International Paper, that if you are putting more trains into the total region than that little side storage area, which is pretty big, but still, will store, you're going to have problems. And that's why the trains have been blocking roads. And this, of course, has been going on for years. As Commissioner Barrett at his town hall last week talking about, what he had learned in the process of trying to solve this problem and recognizing that it was largely, part of it was Alabama Gulf Rail and realizing having to work with them. And so basically getting them to promise that shouldn't be happening anymore and that they would try to work on that.
Well, what's happening is, when you have normal business, normal business traffic, normal business, transport coming through there on the rail that shouldn't be backing up into 29. When there are a lot of cars stored there, they back up into 29 just through the normal daily, running of the business.
Yeah, exactly. There is another part of this that had to do with CSX that he said, and dealing with Becks Lake Road, which, of course, Becks Lake Road is one of those great Escambia County roads that has two names. What's the other name for Becks Lake Road? Muskogee Road. Same road. So if you ever
it's the same road,
yeah,
right?
It's the same road. You cross the street. Wait, I thought we were on Muskogee. No, you're on Becks Lake. Wait, but back there, exactly, because that's how we do here.
It depends on if there's a train or not. I know that ties in. I know. I've been so mad there.
Before. Right. No, it's so a horrible thing. But he said that he's got some agreement from CSX to behave better in a different way as well.
We've gotten some help from them to try to keep that yard empty so that they wouldn't run into 29 by just the normal freight coming in. We have gotten some pretty good cooperation out of CSX for not blocking Becks Lake Road like they did for a long time. They've rerouted, at the time, this was a few years ago, but they had a lot of freight that they were routing through Pensacola that wasn't destined for Pensacola, and they, rerouted that freight so that we're not we're not just a through point for that freight. The freight that you see coming in, especially southbound on that CSX line just east of 29 in Cantonment, is bound for us. So it's been less, and the blockages there have been less.
So what he got out of CSX is basically a commitment that the non-local train traffic, that we were just being the throughput, that has been causing a lot of our problems. And of course, a lot of this all goes back to the fact that the railroads have these unbelievable protection deals from the federal government that local municipalities basically can't interfere with their operations. Now, in part, that facilitated rail travel and made the country what it is today. But in part, it means that they can frustrate anybody they want to frustrate, and we can't do anything about it. But if they can maybe reroute some of their traffic so that it's not going through here when it doesn't have to come through here, well, you decrease the volume, you decrease the inconveniences caused by that volume. So that's kind of good news. And, and he says, look, to the degree that this has been solved or at least improved, credit to Stephen Berry for that. And, Senator Broxson and other people that have been working on this.
I know it's not ideal. My dear older brother lives in Molino across from Jimmy's Grill. So I'm intimately familiar with the expletives told to me when he's stopped by the by the train coming and going, you know, at times. It is better, but, you know, International Paper has been, they've been supportive, and they do have a lot of influence with Alabama Gulf Rail because that's one of their providers, and they've been supportive. Senator Broxson was supportive when we needed some help in those efforts as well.
All right, so I wanted to give some credit to the commissioner for working on this problem and having an impact on it, because I'm going to spend the rest of the day explaining why this town hall was a debacle for him and an indictment of his leadership. 515 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Now it's time for another tip from ADX Digital, your comprehensive digital marketing partners.
Many businesses in our area ask us point blank, why do I need you, meaning ADX Digital, to do my business's digital marketing? Why can't I just do it on my own with Facebook and Google? Well, just because you can does not necessarily mean you should. The reality of it is digital marketing is constantly changing, growing, and evolving. Are you up to date with the latest advancements, trained in the latest technologies and platforms? Do you really have the time to design all the ads on your own, read the ebooks, plan the campaign, and begin to try to learn all of this stuff yourself? Aren't you already responsible for holding down the workload of 2-3 full-time jobs already? It's time you contact our trusted team of media experts at ADX Digital. We are your trusted team for community partnerships and radio marketing, and a comprehensive list of opportunities available for you in the online digital marketing space. We invite you to email us today at connect@adxdigitalmarketing.com to get started on your path to a digital marketing partnership.
ADX Digital, your comprehensive digital marketing partners.
Ugh, I don't have time for a cold.
Honey.
Honey?
You need DayQuil Severe Honey flavor.
DayQuil Severe Honey gives you powerful cold and flu symptom relief with a honey-licious taste. Because life doesn't stop for a cold.
Okay, I'm ready to go.
Now I'm getting a cold.
Honey.
Try DayQuil Severe Honey for powerful cold and flu relief. DayQuil Severe Honey flavor. The daytime coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, honey-licious. Power through your day, medicine.
Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, Pensacola Bay Oysters, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
Attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Business owners and professionals face special challenges in divorce court. They have to contend with allegations that they are earning more than they are, coupled with claims on their business or practice itself. Clients with assets depend on their divorce lawyer's skills in these matters.
For matters in Tennessee, visit CordellCordell.com. 200 West Martin Luther King Boulevard, Suite 1000, Chattanooga, Tennessee, 37402. No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the quality of legal services performed by other lawyers.
Quick, name two things that hiss. Did you say gas leak? If not, here are some safety tips. Look, listen, smell, and leave. Look for blowing dirt, dead plants, dry spots in moist areas, and bubbling water in creeks or ponds. Listen for a hissing sound near gas appliances or lines. Smell for a rotten egg odor. If you detect any of these signs, leave immediately and call Pensacola Energy at 850-474-5300. Snakes and cats aren't the only things that hiss. Learn more at PensacolaEnergy.com.
More news, more talk with Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on at 11, right after the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Yes, no, I'm being told that Average Joe's does not have enough players and will be forfeiting the championship match.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Sender My Love is one of those songs where, you know, Journey, you know, you're like Separate Ways, yeah, and then you hear that and you're like, oh, so good. 519 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. We've got Steve Taylor in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Steve?
Well, good morning. President Biden's going to start wearing a mask again after First Lady tested positive for COVID-19. The White House says Biden will mask up indoors and has tested negative. The press secretary says First Lady Jill Biden has mild symptoms and will remain in Delaware for the week as she recovers.
You know, the thing that confuses me about this announcement, first of all, he had the mask on and then he took it off during the Medal of Honor award ceremony. That was weird. But also, I don't understand why, because obviously his wife tested positive.
Right.
No problem.
She already has it.
Right. It is because the mask, as we all remember, is not a defensive weapon. A mask is to protect other people from me.
Right.
If I have it. And if he's tested negative and doesn't have it,
he doesn't need it.
He doesn't need to protect anybody. And it,
well, God forbid people be polite, but whatever.
No, but like the whole point is it's not meant to protect him from somebody else, like his wife. I assume they are not cohabiting at the moment. She's isolating. So I don't. It's a weird decision. Plus, like, he took it off halfway through the ceremony. But anyway, go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
Okay. Well, North Dakota is one of the hardest working states in America. That's based on a Labor Day study by personal finance website WalletHub. It ranked all 50 states on 10 key factors, including the number of people with multiple jobs, the average hours worked per week, and the unemployment rate. Well, North Dakota did place first, followed by Alaska, then South Dakota, then Nebraska, Wyoming. And the question is, what about Florida? Do we score well on the hard-to-work list or hardly working list? And the other question is, you know, those states, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, Alaska, Nebraska, Wyoming, they hit the list because what else is there to do there besides work?
Yeah, right. I mean, really? You know, you work or you, I don't know, run with the cattle.
Yeah.
You know? So that's about it.
And that's what's happening.
All right, Steve, thanks so much for the update. 437-1620, that's my phone number. There's a really interesting story that, you know, I have not seen this reported in sort of regular, it may have, I don't watch all the newscasts or anything, but, you know, I thought this was fascinating. The AP comes out with a story yesterday. Headline, Pakistani premier claims U.S. military equipment left behind in Afghanistan is now in militant hands. Now, on the one hand, you might say, well, duh, because we abandoned all of this gear. My God, how many billions of dollars worth of stuff that we just left behind because it's, you know, less expensive to just abandon the stuff than it is to actually, you know, get it back home. And plus, in the short time frame allowed that, you know, the quick pull out and the debacle that was that led to military members being killed in that bomb attack outside of the airport. But here, the Pakistan's caretaker prime minister claims Monday U.S. military equipment left behind during the American withdrawal of Afghanistan has fallen into militant hands and ultimately made its way to the Pakistani Taliban. How is that possible? Taliban on the east side of the border, you know, in Afghanistan, and Pakistan Taliban on the west side of the border in Pakistan. Of course, they're going to cooperate to some degree. The equipment, which includes a wide variety of items from night vision goggles to firearms, has now emerged as a new challenge for Islamabad. That's the capital of Pakistan, as it enhanced the fighting capabilities of the Pakistani Taliban. This, according again to Prime Minister Anwar ul Haq Kakar, and the whole idea here is that the Pakistani Taliban only had X level of resources and capabilities before, and now they're operating with military hardware from the United States that they didn't have before. And, you know, the Taliban seized all of this leftover stuff, guns, ammunitions, helicopters, modern military equipment, and including equipment that we didn't just drop on the ground when we ran away, withdrew, but that the Afghan forces, you know, we equipped them. And remember how long they lasted. I mean, they were falling anyway, but this was a, oh, no, I wasn't with them. Night vision goggles. I don't know. I was just holding those for a friend. You know, like that was kind of the, you know, an Apache. I don't even know how to fly a helicopter. That's not mine. Right. That's kind of how this stuff all turned out in the end. I love this line in the story. This is my favorite line in the whole story. That's horrible. Though no one knows the exact value, U.S. defense officials have confirmed it is significant. when an entity that deals in, you know, $800 billion budgets every year says, we're not really sure how much stuff we left, but it's significant, trust me, it's enormous, the amount of stuff, right? Everybody knows that. So Pakistani Taliban have released statements and video clips recent months claiming they possess, for example, guns with laser and thermal sighting systems, the kind of stuff you absolutely want to have in the hands of the terrorists, the Pakistani Taliban. TTP, that's the acronym for their organization. Fighters now target Pakistani troops from a distance. Before, their weapons were just AK-47s, so that's kind of short-range light arms fire, without going into more detail about it. They've increasingly been given shelter by the Afghan Taliban, straining relations between Islamabad and Kabul. And look, you know, I don't know. I don't have a good sense. I'm not an expert on this subject of just how much control and or power and or threat the TTP is to Pakistani regular government. But the Pakistan, let's just say, is not the most solid government in the world, right? And the longstanding concern about Pakistan, where you may recall there was a fairly famous, now dead terrorist who was being harbored within Pakistan, just a mile or two away from their training academy for the military or the police. I forget now which. So Pakistan has had issues for a long time, and Pakistan controls nuclear weapons. And Pakistan has long simmering, long running, cold then hot conflict with its other neighbor, India. And they certainly do not get along, and or at least a longstanding history of this. And there's always the concern, like, well, if the Taliban have here, and then the Taliban can expand there, and the there is next to the other, and, there's nuclear weapons available to some degree, you can see why people are a little bit concerned about this. It's bad for the Taliban to be oppressing women. That's horrible. We've reported on that many times. But domestic oppression of women pales in comparison to the kind of threat that any real risk to the nuclear regime of a state like Pakistan, carries for the world. 526 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. What else do we have going on? This is... I was actually thinking about having somebody on to talk about this, but I'm going to mention it to you because it's one of those, well, of course they are. Today's college freshmen, the headline goes, are almost like damaged because of COVID, and not because of COVID per se, but because of the impact that COVID had on math skills. You know, what happened during the pandemic is the kids who were in remote education, even Florida did better than a lot of states because we didn't have lockdowns. It's still hard to remember that while Florida kids were going to school, after that first kind of uncertainty period, we got back into the fall and then, we're going back to school. And some kids still stayed home, right? It was kind of optional for kids. And so some of them still stayed home. Well, that impacted their math readiness because math is this odd kind of a subject that you can't just lecture kids to learn in their bedroom while they're on a Zoom call, 6 hours of the day. I mean, not they're learning math for 6 hours, but you get, the capability to do instruction this way is low. We knew it at the time. We're discovering more and more of these consequences. Particularly problematic for kids in math because math is a kind of a, be there, see it, grasp it, collective learning thing, and not necessarily always hands-on, but there's something about math that takes being with the people that are teaching it to you to really be effective. And again, Florida ahead of so many other states because while our kids were going to school, their kids were, sheltering in place basically for a long time, like a year and a half. They didn't go back to school. So now what you have is these kids who, did high school in COVID are now trying to go to college and they can't do math. Now, the United States has been in a math crisis long before COVID ever came along. I'm really good friends with the owners of Mathnasium here locally, and who are fabulous people. And
they are awesome.
They are. What was that, Candy? They're awesome. You said
the most awesome people.
They're fabulous.
They are the best.
And we've had a Dana. We've had a Dana on. A couple of times for the rap, and they're.
And her husband practically helps write the show.
Yeah, Don's great.
We love you, Don.
So I'm very familiar with their perspective on the state of math education here in Escambia County, and it's terrible. I mean, it is, which is why they exist to help fix that problem. But it's not just here, right? And so we were behind to begin with, and now it's just awful. You know, and I know here's the funny thing. If I give you the examples of it, you may not personally know enough about math to do some of the stuff they're saying, but one of the people at the math department chair at George Mason University in Virginia, Maria Emilianko, I'm sure I'm butchering it, but there she goes. She says, we're talking about college-level pre-calculus and calculus classes where the students cannot add a half and a third together. Oh, my God. Now, I don't know whether you can add a half and a third together. Not everybody's good at math, but that's an extremely basic fractions problem. And if you can't do that, it's hopeless for you to do pre-calc and calc. I mean, completely hopeless. You are going to be lost the whole time. You know, somebody else gave the example, Jessica Babcock, a Temple University math professor, said she was grading quizzes from her intermediate algebra classes in college, the lowest option for any of the STEM majors. And the quiz, which she gave as a softball at the beginning just to find out where people were at, said, subtract 8 from negative 6. And again, if you don't know how to do those operations, it can be confusing. It's negative 14. But she said, I graded a whole bunch of papers in a row and no two papers had the same answer and none of them were correct. This is the STEM students' basic math in college. So this is a problem because you will never succeed and get out of poverty, for example. Can't do basic math.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Secretary of State Antony Blinken lands in Kyiv early this morning for an unannounced visit.
I'm here first and foremost to demonstrate our ongoing and determined support for Ukraine as it deals with this aggression.
He's there to announce another $1 billion in military assistance, according to a senior State Department official. Meanwhile, the Kremlin turning to North Korea reportedly for more weapons. Vice President Kamala Harris.
I think it's ill-advised for there to be any collaboration between Russia and North Korea.
The VP during a summit today with other Asian leaders. Gas prices falling again, now $3.80 a gallon, according to AAA. It's the 15th time in the last 20 days gas prices have gone down. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31, 82 degrees, mostly clear in Pensacola. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Black bears and Gulf Breeze, Midway and Navarre causing some safety concerns for some of the residents. One homeowner in Gulf Breeze says she's been dealing with bears for years. Fran Butler told Channel 3 News.
There's a bear right here hitting the window, looking straight at me. And, I jumped out of my skin. And heartbeat raring and racing, and we both were too afraid to move.
The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission says the bears are generally not aggressive, and seeing one in your neighborhood is not necessarily a cause for concern. Chris Broxson says the bears cut through her yard looking for food.
They'll walk right out there. They have, and the bear just stands up. You know, that's an aggressive sign when they do that. We don't go outside at all at night.
One local resident fears the problem will only get worse due to the overdevelopment in the area. Other residents in the area say they hope something is done about the issue soon before somebody gets hurt. One man is dead after a shooting at the Silver Lake Mobile Home Park in Escambia County last night. The shooting happened about 9:30 p.m. at a residence inside the park. According to the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, the man was shot and killed while attempting to enter the residence. Deputies are still investigating the circumstances around the shooting, and no arrests have been made. Sheriff Chip Simmons says when he first got elected, he opened a substation in Perdido and also reopened Molinos. Now he's looking at the possibility of opening two more, one in the Myrtle Grove area and one in Beulah.
I just think that as we continue to grow, we have to stay ahead of this growth with regards to law enforcement, because you can grow and grow, but if your community is not safe, if your resources are not in place, then eventually that growth will stagnate. It won't be worth living in those homes.
Discussions are still in the very early stages, but Simmons says he's had talks with Commissioner Jeff Bragash about a substation being located near the Equestrian Center or out at the OLF 8 property. Looks like it's going to be another nice day. Let's check the forecast from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. Beautiful day today with a high near 91 degrees, 20% chance of a stray shower or thunderstorm. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 76. This nice summer pattern continues for Thursday with a 20% chance of rain, high near 92. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 78 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson for the First Morning Weather Center.
Right now, 78 degrees in Pensacola, 81 in Gulf Breeze, 74 in Milton. At 5:35. Next news is at 6. Breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Start your mornings with Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News 5 to 9. Followed by the Pensacola Expert Panel, or Pep Talk. Then join the national news conversation with Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins at 11. Fox News' Guy Benson takes over at 2. And join Gracie wrap up your workday from 4 till 7. And then Dave Ramsey takes over.
On News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters, today on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 9. They'll be discussing Jackson's cooking class, Atlas beverage class, Jackson's open for lunch, Atlas Oyster House, and other fun things you won't want to miss. That's all today at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel with Great Southern Restaurants.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Pensacola Right Now with Joe and Gracie, from 4 till 7, right before Dave Ramsey on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Yesterday, as we do, we had a chance to talk to Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons, who it's kind of weird. He wasn't here. He's for about a year, maybe 6 months. I don't know. He's been coming in studio.
At least a year. Yeah, I know. Way. It hurts my heart when he doesn't.
I know. It's great to see him every week. But, you know, he had an engagement on the west side, so it was by phone yesterday. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. I had gotten so accustomed to you being in studio. It's so different having you on the phone again. So it's a little bit weird. I'm adjusting. I'm adapting. When you and I were talking last week, you guys had just reporting that there had been a shooting at the Essex Point apartment building, and this is off of Johnson near Olive, and we have since learned quite a bit about this story, right?
When we talked, I had just gotten some preliminary information. But what our investigators have determined through talking to the suspects and witnesses and the victims, that a 15-year-old female was having a relatively normal morning until she decided to pull a gun and shoot at her mother and her mother's fiancé while they were still in the bed. So apparently she went to the car and everything was good. They talked about homework, and then all of a sudden she walks in to the bedroom. Again, her mother and her mother's fiancé were still in bed, and then she just started firing. She fired a couple times at her mother, narrowly missing her. In fact, her mother had a head wrap on, and the bullet struck that head wrap, but luckily did not strike her.
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, her fiancé did not fare well, and he was struck in the head, and he was ended up being killed. So the 15-year-old has been charged with murder. We're working with the state attorney's office to determine whether we can charge her as an adult.
And do you have a motive or any kind of like what happened?
No, that's the peculiar part about this. We always look for, the why. And in this case, we didn't get anything. And that's why kind of my comment about a relatively normal morning, there wasn't even, based on what we have gathered, there wasn't even an argument. It was a normal morning. She pleasantries with her mother, and then she came in with a gunshot, and then she took the keys and left. Our detectives were able to locate her at her boyfriend's house, so we picked her up there.
And it was over off of Harris, I think, on the west side, or off of Massachusetts. So, and by the way, I was wrong. It was not Tuesday. You and I didn't talk about this. It was Wednesday, and I had been communicating with your PIO about the facts of the case. And so, wow, what a strange, strange circumstance. We also had, I think, Wednesday night, the Oakstead Mobile Home Park. I believe there were three people shot, but I don't think anybody died in this particular case, which is good news. Do we know anything more about this one?
Yeah, there were injuries to legs and arms, as I understand it. This is a large group of young people that were engaged in a disturbance, and then, unfortunately, as too often happens, there were shots rung out, and we get there, and no one's telling us anything about anything. There are conflicting statements, and we're asking if anyone was there or if anyone has any videos. We would certainly like to see it, but not being overly cooperative. And fortunately, no one's going to die from this, but it started from a group of people that knew each other and then became angered, and that anger turned into gunfire.
All right. And you guys have had a couple of others, just sort of odd ones, but at least one of them led to an arrest. You had a guy who was stealing copper, and I think, is this the same one where he was actually tried stealing it from the same place more than once?
Yeah, we got a call that he was caught on security camera earlier, and then so we started heading that way, and then he was kind enough, I guess, to do it again while we were close by. We surrounded the building. He tried to get away. He jumped the fence, climbed another fence. We had our canine speeder was on his trail. Finally, we pinned him in another fenced-in area where he surrendered. Before he surrendered, he had... there's some pictures on our Facebook page, but where he had discarded a number of items, tools, basically all his tools, stolen property that he had. Much of it was copper. So we ended up arresting him for burglary, obviously for construction site, grand theft, and that sort of thing.
Is that still... See, I had thought that the copper theft wave had kind of died off. I knew it was a real problem back in like the, teens, the 2000 teens, and I didn't think that was still really happening that much anymore, but is that back to being a problem?
Well, I think that if you talk to contractors, it's always a problem, people stealing from construction sites.
Okay.
Whether it's copper, whether it's equipment, whether it's wood. A couple of years ago, wood was a pretty high commodity.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that people will steal anything. I've come to learn that you can't count on just, someone stealing one thing or the other. They're criminals, and they look for opportunity, unfortunately. And if it's copper, they take the copper. If it's tools, they take the tools. I just think that they should concern themselves with taking other people's property.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And, I don't know if this is really a silver lining in it, but, taking something from a construction site is terrible. And I think going on a construction site when you're not allowed is a felony. It's not just ordinary trespass, in part because of that problem. But I remember when people would be like, ripping copper tubing out of vacant homes and things like that. And, you make $1,000 and cost $15,000 worth of damage. It was such a disproportionate impact to the person who owned the property that I was like, it's just, it's an infuriating kind of crime.
I think that tells you the mental makeup of a thief. They don't care about anyone but themselves. They sure don't care that the damage that they do is going to cause hardship. Sometimes they steal from air conditioning units, rendering them useless in a hot summer day. But they don't care. That's why they're criminals, and that's why we try so hard to put them in jail.
You made another arrest that involved some drugs and guns. What was this one all about?
Yeah, we arrested a Christian Melendez. On August the 8th, a male described as wearing distinctive clothing was caught again on video, prying open a front door of a store. This one was on Kemp Strand Road. He made entry and he stole about $400 worth of tobacco products, Later on that same day, he returned to the store where what it bought was closed, forced through the front doors. He stole $600 in tobacco products. I guess he couldn't get enough tobacco products. But it also cost $2,000 worth of damage. To your point earlier, they're doing a lot of damage. We have identified him as Christian Menendez. Was arrested at his home. The search revealed that clothes that he was wearing, this distinctive clothes. It also revealed an amount of marijuana. It looks like a pretty good amount of marijuana. Some cash. He had bullets. He had two handguns, an AR, and he is being charged with that burglary and also with those gun crimes.
He was a former felon. Is why he's not allowed to have the guns? I didn't quite catch that. Sorry.
Well, we charge him with weapons offenses. When you have a weapon or you arm yourself during the commission of a felony,
I got you.
That is a weapons offense in itself.
Very good. Hey, last thing I just wanted to ask you, it's kind of a follow-up on you and I talked previously quite some time ago about you wanting to open two substations that I can't remember if they were reopens or if they were new opens, but I wanted to ask you how that's been turning out, if that's been producing results for you.
Yeah, we opened, when I first got elected, we opened the substation in Perdido, uh-huh. And that's going very well. We also reopened the one in Molino. Again, that was going pretty well. What my future goal is, I think I should look after, you know, the agency and the community years in advance and take a look at where we might need a substation. I've identified areas in Myrtle Grove and also the area in Beulah because of its tremendous growth.
Yeah.
So I've had conversations with Commissioner Burgosh about potential locations, whether it is on the side of the equestrian center up there, or maybe even in OLF-8. This is kind of what I'm thinking, and we can have much more serious conversations moving forward. I just think that as we continue to grow, we have to, you know, stay ahead of this growth with regards to law enforcement, because you can grow and grow, but if your community is not safe, if your resources are not in place, then eventually that growth will stagnate. It won't be worth living in those homes.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, hey, if you want to be the first building on OLF-8, you know, you can be right out front. You can have your pick of the real estate.
So, put me in the middle.
Put you somewhere in the middle. You can respond to the homes that will eventually be there and everybody else off of 9 Mile in that vicinity. Sheriff Chip Simmons, he is a sheriff in Escambia County. As always, Sheriff, thanks so much for the time. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.
Absolutely. 546 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you are thinking about that next home, thinking about buying or selling, honestly, either direction or both, maybe, you know, because it could be you're selling and buying. That's true, right? Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they will take good care of you. They are just fantastic. More than 230 homes sold last year with her team. And, you know, a lot of times I talk about, you know, Christina, obviously, because, you know, she's great. But also that her team that works with her, you know, and that those folks also do a fantastic job, because she is kind of, you know, duplicated herself in them, right? She's kind of passed on the same way of doing business, the same approach to customer service, the same way of thinking about, you know, really serving the customer and making sure that their needs are met properly and all of that. And, you know, so she's got these people with her that have kind of learned to follow that same pattern and do just a absolutely fantastic job. In fact, I was reading one of the reviews that was posted on the Leavenworth Realty website from Kelly, talking about Dylan Smith. Says, Dylan Smith with the Leavenworth team is by far the greatest realtor I've ever had. He not only helped me get my home, but helped me understand the whole process of becoming a homeowner along the way. Every time I called him, he was available to me. And if he was busy, he'd let me know immediately. He'd get back to me as soon as possible and did just that. I really don't know when this man even gets to sleep, since he seems to be so dedicated to his work. Dylan treated me like I was his own family while helping me find my forever home, and I truly couldn't be more grateful. If you want a realtor with excellent care and communication skills, Dylan is your guy. This is from Kelly. And that's the point. You know, Christina has grown and expanded and surrounded herself with this team. And I use that phrase, and her team at Leavenworth Realty, on purpose, because, you know, there are a lot of people that she's got helping her get this kind of success and take care of folks. 723-9158 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
This is Paul Epstein with Running Wild. Join me today at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Discover why we at Running Wild are the running and fitness experts in the Pensacola and Fairhope communities, specializing in fitting you in the best shoe, apparel, and training for your unique needs. We pride ourselves on serving, training, and encouraging you to reach your goals. So bring your questions today at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3. 92.3 AM 1620.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at David's Catfish House. David's Catfish is serving only the best Mississippi catfish and fresh Gulf seafood, as well as generous portions of delicious southern sides. Every Wednesday is Wacky Wednesday, featuring $5.99 lunch basket specials until 3 p.m. And get ready for Shrimp-tastic Thursday. They're serving fresh seafood daily at David's Catfish House. Visit them on Dogwood Drive in Milton or on New Warrington Road in Pensacola. Welcome to David's, where southern and seafood meet.
I am Claire Stewart with the University of West Florida Historic Trust. Our annual open house event will be held in downtown Pensacola on September 9th. Learn more about the programming, tours, and experiences available that day, offered for free to all attendees. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we discuss Historic Trust Open House 2023. That's tomorrow at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3.
Fox News Guy Benson gives you the news and brings you the newsmakers every day at 2 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm going to take this right foot, and I'm going to whop you on that side of your face. And you want to know something? There's not a damn thing you're going to be able to do about it.
Friday night, I walk alone to get the feeling right. We started. I was gonna play this yesterday, but then you played it.
Oh, I know. That's the one fight that we. Well, I know. No, it's not. But that's
not the only
that's
one.
That's one of the only fights we ever have.
That's right.
The only serious fight.
That's right. That's right.
Like 182.
What do you mean you don't like the Goonies? 550 on News Radio 92.3 Informative.
It's Princess
local.
Bride.
No, I'm saying you would say to me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Oh, you hate the Goonies?
No, I don't hate the Goonies. I just don't get it. Just like you don't get Princess Bride. That's it. I mean,
so
you
two
know,
fights.
I, yes. We fight about fight. Music and movies, right? The only things that matter. 551 on News Radio 92.3, Informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. That's Candy. Steve is in the newsroom with our headlines. Steve?
She doesn't like Princess Bride?
I passed her by. She didn't watch it when it first came
when it
out.
Came out and then everybody was like, oh, do you want a peanut? Like, this is my favorite movie ever. And then I watched it, but it's a children's movie. But I saw it when I was 29, but I was like 35.
Anybody want a peanut?
Well, oh, my God. I know. And every guy in the world on two legs or even without legs loves this stupid movie, including Steve, probably, which
course.
Is fine.
Yeah.
Well, Princess Bride has the unique distinction of being the only funny movie that a whole generation of Christians even saw, because it was PG. And so when they do movie night for the church kids, they'd always watch Princess
that's
Bride.
That's why everybody, that makes sense. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
None of those kids watched Stripes or Porky's or Revenge of the Nerds or all of the other movies that we grew up watching.
Okay, I get where I differ. That makes, yeah, you know what? That you just,
so yeah. you
thank you. I could have used that 30 years ago. Thank
you're,
you.
You're attacking the one thing they had.
I like Napoleon Dynamite. Yeah. Here's the other thing they have.
There you go. Yeah. All right, Steve, go ahead.
Well, Warner Brothers Discovery expects to lose a lot of money this year as the Hollywood writers and directors strike continues. The company that owns TV and movie studios is adjusting its full-year earnings expectations by $300 million to $500 million. You see, the Writers Guild of America has been on strike since May, and SAG-AFTRA joined in July, so that's why nothing's happening in Hollywood right now. It looks like a young bull moose became tangled in a backyard hammock in Steamboat Springs on Monday. The animal got his antlers caught in the netting, was unable to free himself, so the Colorado Parks and Wildlife officers were sent to the scene. The moose was sedated with a tranquilizer gun. The officers were able to untangle his antlers from the hammock, and the moose, happy ending here, woke up and walked away unharmed. And no word if he was accompanied by a squirrel named Rocky or not.
Can you imagine laying in that hammock? Like a moose could carry
Natasha,
you around.
Yeah. Look what we've discovered.
Between the antlers, yeah.
You know, it is.
I'm the boss now. Look,
you know
me.
How you're saying the SAG-AFTRA strike has cost them their revenue for the year. Right. Of course, the flip side of that is, you know, labor costs are a little lower right now.
There it is.
That's true. A lot of people.
But it's hard to make a profit when you can't produce a product.
Yeah.
Right? That's true. All right, Steve, thanks so much for the update. 553 on News Radio 92.3. So the District 1 Medical Examiner's Office, something that, you know, Kenny and I have been talking about for quite some time because you have this stupid political fight where so far, you know, three or four, depending on how you count it, just Mike Kohler's not part of the problem because he wants to actually get it put into Santa Rosa County and do what the other three counties want to do and what makes sense. But, you know, Stephen Barry is so attached to preserving the relationship with Sacred Heart for reasons that defy explanation, actually going so far as to, depending on your take on the facts, either shepherd, caretake, or orchestrate a political hit job against the medical examiner with the medical directors, and there's now a defamation lawsuit against them. This is all the background, right? I'm just saying. And the facility at Sacred Heart is not good. It's not adequate, and they need bigger and better. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm giving
ask us in person.
Yeah. How do we know? We know.
We know.
But giving kind of the background, well, the District 1 Medical Examiner's Board, DOMES, had a meeting about 2-3 weeks ago, something like that. Anyway, and, you know, sometimes when I'm on vacation, I get all backlogged on all these meetings. But I wanted to give you a little bit of the flavor of the conversation around basically ratifying the agreement, all of the particulars, not so much about the building and the facility itself, but sort of backdrop to that. This is Allison Rogers, and she's the attorney for Escambia County, talking about, well, what level of budgeting for DOMES, because it's this weird system where these four counties all fund the medical examiner, and what happens if, say, three of the counties decide that this is the budget and we agree that we're supposed to pay, you know, 38% or whatever it is, then we're obligated to pay, Escambia County is obligated to pay based on what they decided.
Yeah, I mean, no question, each county is obligated to provide reasonable support, financial support for the ME, but you can't, I just have a real problem with the annual budgetary approval being forced down the throat of a fourth county. That to me is contrary to what Florida law would provide, in my opinion. Now that may not mean you may not have a fourth county that's gone rogue and might have, you know, to deal with whether or not they're funding a reasonable amount.
So, you know, she recognized that there's some, you know, problem if the county just decides not to cooperate, which is kind of where Escambia County is, not so much on this item, but on other things. And I'm not telling you this because she's wrong. Okay, I agree. There is something weird, but that's because the whole system of funding the medical examiner is weird. That four counties get told they've got to have a medical examiner, and then they're going to kind of cooperate. Let's hope they do, but what if they don't? You know, that's the problem. And I just wanted you to get a sense of the tone, right? The tone of the relationship between Escambia and the rest of the board. This is Craig Coffey from Okaloosa. He's, I believe, the chair of the board.
What I would try and do in this interlocal agreement is that everyone understands that if three counties approve it, we are considering that a reasonable operating budget, reasonable cost. So if the fourth county says, I still don't think it's reasonable and beauty is in the eye of the beholder and I'm not paying, the other three counties then have we've attested, or we've, through this agreement, attested that three counties can declare, essentially are declaring it to be reasonable.
So this is a way of trying to create, to avoid the situation where funding would be held up because just the one county doesn't agree that it's the right budget. You know, they're setting these parameters and these percentages now and then saying, look, if three counties approve the budget, y'all need to approve the budget. But what if we don't want to? Well, that's what we're agreeing to, that you will, right? So that was a part of it. She's objecting to that. And then, you know, this idea of, you know, there's a certain declaration in the agreement that has to do with waiving the right to a jury trial. If, like, Escambia County gets sued by the other counties, basically, which is what's maybe going to happen over the building.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to encourage my board to sign off on waiving the right to a jury trial.
And she said it again a little bit later.
So, Allison, you might look back at our current agreement. This language may already be in there.
Well, it may be in there, but I wouldn't encourage them to sign off on something like that.
So it's already in the agreement they currently have, and she's like, well, I don't like that at all. And again, I don't disagree. Like, if you're a lawyer, your job is to preserve the interests of your client. And I'm not saying Allison's doing anything wrong in this. I'm just saying that the tone is not good. The relationship is not good. And, you know, that came up in the actual conversation about the new facility because, you know, they're basically on the verge of having to figure out how to sue Escambia County to participate in funding the infrastructure and facility for the medical examiner's office. Now, I hope that does not happen. I have been told by one person that they actually believe, I don't know if it's public particularly, but they think they can make a deal happen. And I hope so, too. I hope Escambia County figures it out, that they need to be on the side that they haven't been on so far. Again, other than Mike Kohler. He's the one who says that they ought to do it all together. So we'll see how this all plays out. But there is an avenue for this service, which is the service that provides autopsy information for all of your health data, for knowing how people died, and then for prosecuting cases, right? Murders go through the medical examiner's office because that's how you identify cause of death and, you know, what is the evidence compatible with and who can you charge? All that kind of stuff comes out of the medical examiner's office. And there is a chance that in the not too distant future, we're going to have three counties trying to sue Escambia County to participate properly in providing that absolutely essential, you know, para justice function that is jeopardized by the failure to give them the proper facility.
Listen on air at 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.